He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, would you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tar-Hill.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taken the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Graham.
We've made it to a football Friday. It is The Drive on WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. We're on this Halloween weekend. It feels like North Carolina and Wake Forest are teenagers. Teenagers, late at night, home alone, in a horror movie. You know what I'm talking about. You just know that by the end of the weekend, one of them's going to end up dismembered and stuffed in a closet for the other one to discover. The problem is, you just don't know which one it is yet, as Wake Forest heads to Louisville and North Carolina hosts Pittsburgh. Both of these games are scary. And really, should be close games. They should come down to the wire. But the Tar Heels are in the most danger. Just like the Notre Dame game, which was the one team North Carolina's faced this year that they lost to, Pittsburgh's a bad matchup and more than capable of pulling off the upset in Chapel Hill. Other than the Irish, Pitt is the most physical team Carolina has faced this year. The Tar Heels, listen, I picked them to win the Coastal Division. Even if they lose this game, I still think they win the Coastal. But they are a finesse team. They are softer than many of the other teams ranked in the top 25. That doesn't mean they can't compete. That doesn't mean that they're overrated or overranked. They are a finesse team. A lot of great skill position players. Gets pushed around, though, up front, both on offense and defense. They have not proven by any means that they can play well in a fist fight. Pat Narduzzi, on the other hand, is always looking for a fight. In the media, with his players and coaches, it seems like, and certainly on the football field. That's how he coaches them up. And you know, after losing to Louisville last weekend, they're going to play angry. And they know what's on the line. They know that their hopes of getting back to the ACC championship game dashed if they lose to Carolina. They know. Do you think Carolina's going to bring the same level of physicality as Pitt? Honest. Be honest about it. Think about it. I don't care how big of a Carolina fan you are. There's no way you can expect Carolina to bring that same level of grit and intensity as a team that knows it needs to make it happen versus Carolina that has a little bit more leeway. Pittsburgh could have the best tailback in America. Get ready to hear this name a lot. Israel Abanikanda. Fun name to say, Abanikanda. Fourth in the nation in rushing yards. Tied for first in the nation with 13 touchdowns. Carolina's run D has been a weakness. But when you look at the teams that they've faced, far from many of them are far from elite rushing offenses. Notre Dame is the only team ranked in the top 25 of rushing yards per carry that Carolina has faced. So yards per carry, Notre Dame's the only one ranked in the top 25, and they're ranked fourth in the country. We saw them run right through North Carolina. All the others that Carolina has faced, not very good in that category. Pittsburgh's ranked 12th in the country. Abanikanda, one of the best out there. That's going to be an issue. Carolina's run D has been the biggest weakness of the Carolina defense, which we know has struggled. Then you got the youth of Carolina. This team still has not been burned by playing with fire all throughout the year. The youth has not caught up with them. Not in Boone, not in Durham, not in Atlanta against Georgia State. It's just too easy to expect them to lock up the Coastal Division in the month of October. So I don't think they're going to. Plus, North Carolina's 0-5 in games after a bye week under Mac 2.0. Pittsburgh needs the win. They're going to show the urgency that North Carolina will not. Give me Pittsburgh 38, North Carolina 31 tomorrow afternoon. A game that WD Will Dalton is going to be attending.
Yes, I will.
I'm going to be in Knoxville. As soon as we get off the air, I'm headed down to Rocky Top. Never been to Tennessee before. I'll be in attendance for number 3 Tennessee versus number 19 Kentucky.
Some darn good-looking uniforms Tennessee's going to be wearing, man.
Have you seen them?
Blackout.
Black unis.
Oh, yeah. Mean.
Last year, they brought that back, and they had the orange helmets, which I didn't think looked good.
With the black unis?
Yeah. Orange helmets with black unis, not good. Having the black helmet with the black tee, a lot better look for Tennessee. I think they're going to win that game, too. Jones Angel will join us in a little over 5 minutes, not just to talk about Carolina Pitt, but how about basketball tonight? Carolina Hoops. Going to be in action against Johnson C. Smith in an exhibition tonight at the Smith Center. But before we get to Jones, shifting things to the Panthers. As fun of a fever dream as last Sunday was for Carolina, a game that became less shocking when watching Tampa Bay lose again last night against the Ravens, a game that you could have listened to right here on WSJS. Going on the road is usually a recipe for teams like Carolina to be pulled back down to reality. Atlanta's going to win this game. Winning on the road is hard. We hear that. It's a cliche. But sometimes cliches are rooted in truth. Oftentimes they are. Winning on the road's hard, especially when you're not the better team. Atlanta has their full-time head coach. Atlanta has a better record than Carolina does. Atlanta has a deeper roster than Carolina does. The Panthers are playing a quarterback that was a fourth stringer heading into training camp. Carolina is playing a third string running back. Deontay Foreman is going to start. Chuba Hubbard out for this game, we learned today. And of course, Christian McCaffrey was traded to San Francisco last week. Speaking of injuries, the Panthers have a lot of them. In addition to the quarterbacks, no Baker, no Corral, no Darnold, and guys who are currently on injured reserve, like Jeremy Chinn, who's still there, and Pat Elflein, who's out for the remainder of the year, and the guys that you traded, McCaffrey and Robbie Anderson. So in addition to those guys, Carolina has 16 players on the injury report. Atlanta has 4. Now, most of them are going to play. You got Chuba, who's out. Then you have 4 players who are questionable. Among the players who are questionable, J.C. Horn and Frankie Louvu. They're supposed to play, but even if they do, they're going to be far from 100%. Their snap counts aren't going to be that high. Louvu's wasn't last week. This was Steve Wilks speaking to snap counts and the health of guys like J.C. Horn when asked specifically about Louvu.
It's a combination of both, Darren. Coming off injury, you know, we had a pitch count that we wanted to give him in the game. And then once we checked that, we communicated with him just to see how he felt. And he felt good, so we progressed and moved forward. And it'd be the exact same thing this week. You know, I don't want to have any setbacks to try to overload these guys coming off injury, and then all of a sudden we lose them for 3 weeks.
Makes sense, but that means it's probably not going to go well for you in the game since you're already thin and the guys who are playing not able to give you as much as you would like them to. The reality is Carolina's one of the 3 worst teams in the league. These are the teams. It's Carolina, Houston, and Detroit. They're the worst teams in the NFL. Maybe Pittsburgh gets added to that group. Those are the worst teams that you're looking at. Carolina, they beat Tampa. They're probably not going to win any games on the road, if I had to guess. And Sunday is no exception to that. Give me Atlanta to win a close game, 23-20, something of that sort. Atlanta takes care of the Panthers. Sounding like a bummer today. Josh, you think Carolina football is going to lose and Carolina Panthers as well? You seem like a lot of fun. You must be fun at parties. That's the line that people have. I said Wake was going to win. They're not the team that's going to get stuffed in the closet.
You probably are fun at parties.
Hanging upside down? Yeah, well, I don't know how fun I am at parties. I'll let other people decide that. Tennessee, Rocky Top, they're going to win, I think. But as I mentioned, it's not just Carolina football that's top of mind. The Tar Heels will have their dress rehearsal in basketball at the Smith Center tonight. An exhibition against Johnson T. Smith. the voice of the Tar Heels, Jones Angel, will join us to get into Carolina hoops next.
Let's get the show going.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
We are about, what, 4 hours away from tip for Tar Heel basketball tonight? Crazy. Think about everything that's happened between the last time the Tar Heels took the floor at the Smith Center and tonight when they have their exhibition against Johnson C. Smith. Right now we're being joined by the man who will be on the call for that game and also for Carolina-Pittsburgh tomorrow because he's the voice of the Tar Heels, Jones Angel, that joins us. Jones, the time's always appreciated in the triad. A lot of the attention tonight's going to be on the newcomers, Pete Nance and some of these freshmen as well. But I actually want to start with the returners. That was a big story in the offseason. Among the returning players, whose role do you think changes the most from last year to this season?
Oh, that's a good question. And I think you've got the core four guys, right? The Baycott, Black, Davis, Love. And I think we probably, if you've watched Carolina basketball, understand what their roles are. And so to me, it's a much larger question as far as somebody who is returning, who is going to be capable of stepping up into a larger role than they played a year ago. And to me, you know, you've got DeMarco Dunn, Dontre Styles, and also Puff Johnson. And which one of those guys is going to be able, or multiple of those guys, is going to be able to provide some quality minutes for Carolina, whether that's in a starting role or whether that's in a reserve role, because I do think the desire for the Tar Heels is to play more than just five and a half guys, which is about what Carolina played last year by the end of the season, where you had your starting five and then you find somebody who could help you on a game-to-game basis off the bench. I think the desire this year, if possible, is to have more depth and not have to play RJ Davis and Armando Baycott 38, 39 minutes every single game. One of those or multiple of those three in particular, I think Justin McCoy can be in that conversation as well, of which one of those guys is ready to embrace a larger, more impactful role, because I think the opportunity is there.
I remember you and I were chatting right after all the players decided to come back. Everybody that could come back decided to come back. And you emphasized pretty strongly, let's not do this title or bust thing. And I think rightfully your argument, it's something I agree with, hey, in March, it's random. You got to win six in a row, deriving success, deriving what exactly a great season is based on whether or not you win six in a row, seems like you're setting yourself up for failure. You're the number one team in the country now, and all the expectations are there. Do you think the players believe it's not title or bust?
I think the players believe that they have a team that is capable of winning the title. I think also that title will not be won for, what, Josh, 5-6 months by somebody? I think right now a much more realistic goal or realistic thought is – if you want to go big picture, because I think anybody could sit here and say small picture, improve every day, you know, build chemistry together, all those things that I think are valid. But I think a bigger picture goal right now for Carolina is try to win the ACC championship or regular season title, get a good seed in the NCAA tournament, and get to play in Greensboro in those first couple of rounds, because I do think that makes a difference. If you're the Tar Heels and you're getting to play that close to home, it's an advantage, plain and simple. And so those are things, I think, if you're thinking long-term, that are attainable, that you can, even with the first game of the season against UNCW on November 7th, those are things you can start working towards and building a resume for when you begin to play in the regular season.
Ahead of tonight's exhibition between the Tar Heels and Johnson C. Smith, it's the voice of the Tar Heels, Jones Angel, joining us here on WSJS. A really cool thing happened a few years ago. I remember you and I were texting back and forth when you guys brought B-Dot onto your podcast, and it's a great podcast that you and Adam Lucas do together, the Carolina Insider Podcast. And when you brought him on, everybody loved him immediately. And not too long after that, you have him hosting Late Night for the first time around a year ago, then just being around for every home game, and his brand has kind of exploded where now he's a fixture at Carolina events, whether it's men's or women's basketball or football. He's just become that guy. What have you enjoyed seeing this relationship between our guy B-Dot and Carolina basketball, specifically the last few years, how that's grown?
So should I take credit or blame for B-Dot being around all this? You know what? I think what Hubert Davis has tried to do, and B-Dot's part of that, is Hubert Davis is trying to he's trying to have a nice marriage of Carolina basketball, of the history and tradition of the program, because it is matched by few. You know, it is in the very small group of teams that you want to talk about, whether that's Kansas or Kentucky or UCLA or Duke or whatever other team is in that small group. Carolina has a resume that can stand up with any one of them. So you want to honor that and champion that and be proud of that. But Carolina also wants to be a modern program and wants to appeal to the guys that they want to come play basketball for them, which are right around 18 years old. And so Hubert Davis has, and not just in that way, with the game day atmosphere and things like that, which is always an ongoing discussion and challenge for not just here at Carolina, but for everybody. But in a lot of different ways around the program. And I think that has been one of his challenges, talking about Coach Davis, and one of the things that he feels is important to continue to work on and try to do. And I do think that game day atmosphere, and B-Dot's a big part of that as the game day host, I do think that is part of that transition of finding that combination of honoring what has made Carolina great for so long, but also being a program that is modern and is today.
On the way out, getting the football, Jones Angel joining us. This is a scary game, I think, for Carolina tomorrow when you look at some of the similarities between Pittsburgh and, say, the Notre Dame team we saw a month and a half ago, from a physicality standpoint, from a running standpoint. What concerns you the most on this Halloween weekend for North Carolina facing Pittsburgh tomorrow?
Well, I think it's just the quality of the opponent. And you're right. I do think that if you were picking a team that Pittsburgh most closely resembled that the Tar Heels have played, it would, without a doubt, be Notre Dame, because the Panthers want to run the football, and they have a terrific running back in Abanikanda and Ronnie Hammond, who has been injured, but I think he's a really good back as well. So they have the dudes to do it and the desire to do it, to run the ball. They want to possess the football. For multiple reasons, primarily because they want to keep it away from Carolina, because we've seen how good Carolina's offense has been through the first seven games of the regular season. And they want to play a physical, in-your-face style of defense that is based on controlling the line of scrimmage. And all of that sounds like Notre Dame. And so we are going to get a terrific opportunity to see if Carolina has made some growth from that game against the Fighting Irish a month or so ago to this game coming up on Saturday night. Now, for the Tar Heels, some of the things that are important regardless of who they are playing, and that is being smart with the football, that is trying to find some more consistency defensively, and that is getting the ball to their playmakers in an effective way, which is something they have been able to do pretty darn consistently all season long. And so, boy, it's an important game for Carolina, Josh. We all can look at the standings of the Coastal Division and understand the implications that a win would have for the Tar Heels. And so certainly an important game and a sold-out crowd, and one that they want to come out and play very well.
Jones, you got football tomorrow, basketball tonight. I was about to say rest the pipes, but nah, we're kind of counterintuitive to that by just having you on and speaking today about basketball and football. How about I'll just say have a couple great calls this weekend, and we hope we could catch up sometime soon.
Sounds good, Josh. Thanks so much for the time, as always.
Hey, Triad, this is Rich Eisen. Catch me this evening at 6 for The Rich Eisen Show. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
A A lot of attention on Taylor Swift. This new Carly Rae Jepsen, pretty good. You know where Carly Rae's from?
I don't.
Baltimore. Huge Orioles fan.
Oh, look at that.
Throwing that out there. Weekly positivity in a second, but first, Woods of Terror. This is their weekend at McLaurin Farms. In the Triad, I don't think there's a better place to be today, tomorrow, Sunday, or Monday, the next four nights, than going to Woods of Terror. You could even go all four nights if you want to. Get your tickets, woodsofterror.com. And a reminder, if you miss out on the action this weekend, oh man, I'm out of town, I got trick-or-treating with the kids on Monday night, they actually have two more nights after Halloween, next Friday and Saturday, that you could get tickets for as well. It's a great show. They do a fantastic job with it. So make sure you pay them a visit. Now we'll transition to the most controversial segment that we do every week. It's the Dick Vitale of radio segments. The reason that is, there's nothing more positive that you're going to hear, but more controversial because people don't like that positivity for some reason. It's weekly positivity. On Twitter at WSJS Radio. If you'd want to tell us something good, such as NASCAR Junkie, who writes in, going to the Cup race Sunday and found out yesterday I was selected to be part of the driver parade.
Wow.
That allows me to drive a truck with a driver on the back around the track. Hashtag weekly positivity. That's good.
Yeah.
If you're listening, NASCAR Junkie, do you know what driver it is? Or do you learn when you roll up? And what driver would you like it to be? It's a good question. If you could pick any driver to hang out with, for instance, which driver might you pick? For some reason, my brain immediately went to Brad Keselowski because I think he'd be a cool hang. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that would be my pick. Austin Dillon has always been really good on the radio show with us, or I should say, really good on the radio show with us. Chase Elliott's been cool with us too.
I think I'd hang out with Jeff Gordon, because I'm a fan.
How about active, current drivers? Jeff Gordon's in the booth. If you were doing all time, I'd say, what's Dale Jr. up to? And I'd hang out with Dale, because I like his podcast, and he was a really good driver.
Austin Dillon does seem like a pretty cool dude, so I'd probably go there.
That's a good choice. Got anything good for us today, WD?
I watched Get Out for a second time last night.
You really did like it.
I did. It's one of the better horror movies I've seen.
What's something upon the second viewing that you didn't catch the first time? For example, when I rewatched it in recent weeks, I didn't catch the way that Allison Williams' character interacted when they hit the deer on the way to the parents' home. No empathy, which should have been a sign that she's a sociopath.
Death is no big deal.
And number two, when the officer was asking for his ID, the real reason she didn't want him to have the ID was because she didn't want evidence that he was headed close to where her parents lived.
I found that whole brain operation scene. I took a little closer look at that because it just was really interesting.
What, you don't think that just stuffing a little bit of cotton in your ear would have been good enough?
I don't
know. To prevent
know.
Yourself from being out?
That cotton looked really thin. It didn't look like a thick cotton ball.
It's a symbolic gesture.
I see.
I'm headed to Knoxville as soon as we get off the air. Never have been there. Never been to a game at Tennessee. I've been told for years that Neyland Stadium is an awesome place to go to. So I'm really excited to do that. This is the question that I have, though. At East Carolina, they know how to get down. They know how to tailgate and do all that. But they don't open up tailgate lots 12 hours before kick the way that they're doing so at Tennessee tomorrow. 7 p.m. kick, 7 a.m. the tailgate lots open.
Wow.
If you actually plan to attend a night game, there are some who don't plan to go to the game. I'm just there to tailgate, 7 a.m. until I pass out. If you plan to attend the game, how many hours is too many hours to tailgate?
I don't think there's a set number. I think if you're about it, I say get there at 7 a.m. and hop to it.
I am not.
I think you should and get the full experience.
No. Sarah Bradford would not enjoy that at all. Also, probably not going to get in till about 10:30, 11 o'clock tonight. So I want to do some exploring of the night scene in Tennessee tonight.
Probably a good idea.
Which case, I'm not going to be up at 7 a.m. Hitting the tailgate lot. Don't think that's going to happen. But I am very excited. Very, very excited. Anything else?
I might have a horror movie marathon this weekend.
What's in that marathon?
I'm going to rewatch all the Scream movies because those are my favorite. Probably the Halloween movies. Basically what? Movies I've already seen, which what? I know you hate.
It's unbelievable. Especially since there are so many classics you haven't seen, such as Silence of the Lambs.
Maybe I'll
you
watch
still
it.
Haven't seen Silence of the Lambs, which, by the way, you could see a lot of influences from The Shining and Silence of the Lambs and Get Out.
You
a
could.
Lot of it. And you like Scream. And we mentioned yesterday some of the Jordan Peele took from a lot of those movies in good ways.
Apparently The Shining was his favorite scary movie.
Yeah.
So and he used a lot of that.
Some of the symbolic stuff we're talking about, that comes straight from The Shining. Silence of the Lambs, there's a lot of stuff there. But anyway, it should be a really good weekend. To close up where we began, NASCAR Junkie writes it. That Corey LeJoe or Ryan Blaney going to be the Cup Series drivers that he's lugging around. And I don't know this Truck Series driver, Matt Dittabendetto.
Cool name, though.
Nailed it. I like Ryan Blaney.
Blaney's
good. I don't know if that's popular to say, so I'll say it quietly in Weekly Positivity.
Blaney.
And that's been Weekly Positivity. Transitioning to something that's not very positive, not very good, so to speak. The news was made official today that Tom Brady and Gisele Bündchen have filed for divorce. Tom, acknowledging it on Instagram, put out a long post about it saying, quote, "In recent days, my wife and I finalized our divorce from one another after 13 years of marriage. We arrived at this decision amicably and with gratitude for the time we spent together. We are blessed with beautiful and wonderful children who will continue to be the center of our world in every way. We will continue to work together as parents to always ensure they receive the love and attention they deserve. We arrived at this decision to end our marriage after much consideration. Doing so is, of course, painful and difficult, like it is for many people who go through the same thing every day around the world. However, we wish only the best for each other as we pursue whatever chapters in our lives that are yet to be written. And we kindly ask for privacy, good luck with that, and respect as we navigate what is to come. the next few days, and then the next few weeks ahead. Thank you. Okay. Brady's divorce is news. I'm uncomfortable with it, but it's news. But it is unrelated to his football performance. I'm sorry. This is the part where I don't connect the two. He is of that Tiger school of thought, MJ class of mental athlete, where he could completely compartmentalize things. When you watch him, he doesn't look physically different. His O-line does, though. And they lost Shaq Barrett today. So I think that's just a criminally lazy oversimplification when talking about, Tom, it's just an effort to say Tom Brady's just like us, when almost in every single way, he is not. And the analysis of the divorce is frustrating, too. If Tom didn't return to play, he'd still be married, as if he was playing baseball and he's gone for 6 months. No, he comes back every single week, and you're talking about a few days a week that he plays and a few months out of the year. There's more to this than meets the eye. Let's go to Scott in Knoxville. Scott, I got about 45 seconds for you here. What do you have for me? What should I expect this weekend?
First and foremost, you want to go to the old city.
Got
tonight.
It.
Then you leave the old city. You want to go to the strip.
The strip.
After you leave the strip, which is Pat Summit Strip, called Pat Summit Boulevard, which is a strip.
Yep.
You will need to go to your hotel room after that. You will need an Uber.
Let me ask you this, Scott. What should I get from the old city? What am I drinking?
Oh, man. I'll drink the homemade beer. They got a lot of beer breweries down there.
Sounds good to me. Go Vols. There goes Scott in Knoxville. I needed that. I have no idea what I was going to go tonight. Funny enough, I think Ryan McGee actually texted me, Old City. Go to Old City.
There you go.
Scott in Knoxville. In the know. That's what I appreciate. Go Big Orange.
Wish that I was on old Rocky Top down in the Tennessee hills.
Bars. Where I will be visiting tonight, probably.
Once I had a girl on Rocky Top.
So excited. If you want to lift morale in the room at all, just blare this.
You're going to lose it when you hear this down there.
Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top.
Woo!
Rocky Top, Tennessee.
I'm ready.
Rocky Top, Tennessee.
I'm ready. Taught Sarah Bradford the words.
Oh, did you?
Yesterday, we were riding the Cracker Barrel in Greensboro. We were off Wendover teaching her the words to that song.
Go to Costco?
We didn't hit Costco yesterday. No. I think Sarah Bradford said she was going to make a quick Costco run before we got out of town today, though. So excited. And I've got a rooting interest. I'm going to be rooting hard for Tennessee tomorrow. Mainly because they're playing Kentucky. Worst fan base in college sports. We have a history. If you don't know that history, if you're new to the show, just Google Josh Graham in Kentucky. See what pops up. Whenever I say the thing that leads to this show being engulfed in flames and our career spiraling into an abyss, I will at least be able to say that something this radio show did led PTI back when there were no live sports and Steve Forbes was just hired firing shot at Kentucky, which then led to BDOT and Robert making jokes about making out with your sister. That's what people in Kentucky do, and not having any teeth. These were things I did not say. Dot and Robert said it. And then later that night, because my name's on the show, national radio host who is Mr. Kentucky, Matt Jones, puts a picture of my face on his Twitter account saying that I said all of those things and sicked all of his fleet of Kentucky fans to our show, flooding our lines and stuff. And how did we respond to those Kentucky fans? Who we knew were listening because he sent them all to listen to us. We got Luke May on the show. That's what we did.
That's fantastic.
Which was outstanding. because then immediately it becomes, oh, screw you.
Such a flex.
Hey, Luke, tell us about that shot you hit in Memphis.
Yes, please.
5-6 years ago. I hate Kentucky so much. Oh, I hate Kentucky. I don't hate teams, but I hate Kentucky. Hendon Hooker, that's another reason why I'm rooting for Tennessee. Triad Boy, Dudley High, Tennessee, best story in college football. Who doesn't want to see potentially number one versus number two next weekend in Athens? I'm game for that. Sign me up. Excited to potentially watch it and see somebody disrupt this big boys party of Ohio State and Clemson and Alabama and Georgia. Get a new, some new blood in there, and it could be Tennessee. Easy to root for that. Also, I'm not a sociopath. That's the last reason why I'm rooting for Tennessee. If you really don't have a dog in the fight and you're going to a game and you're not rooting for the home team, what's your issue? You are a sociopath. If you go to a game that you don't have a rooting interest for and you root against the home team, you're probably just a bleephole, if that's the case. Especially if that team gives you free gear. I got some free Tennessee gear.
You do.
Word to the wise. I don't know if I'm allowed to do this on radio. You will not get anything in return for this except for me saying that I like your team. I'm always game for free gear. Hats, shirts, all of it. Crocs and B-Dot's case. Free gear. I'm about it. Let's recap the week as efficiently as possible. More efficiently than the way I talked about that Tennessee-Kentucky game. By the way, Tennessee 38, Kentucky 27 tomorrow. Kentucky covers. Still Tennessee wins by double digits. Speaking to the point, that was very inefficient. I'm gas bagging. Let's be more efficient about recapping the week and keep it simple.
Five words or less.
They're simple, man.
That's all Josh gets to tell you where your favorite teams are at.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Let's keep it simple.
Okay. Before you start throwing things at me on this Friday, let's get a dance break.
We suck.
Oh! Yes!
Baker's Baker, man. It's okay.
I'm a man! I'm 40!
Oh! We brought music back to Charlotte with concerts.
No, please. No, please, everyone be quiet.
That's the Baker for Brady!
Oh.
Woo! Yes, sir! It's Friday! What do we got? And keep it simple. You couldn't have cleared your voice.
Sure, I could. Sure, I could have. PJ Walker and the Panthers upsetting Tom Brady and the Bucks.
A win to be savored. College does this right. Every week matters. Every week can be special, even if your team's not any good. You can get a historic, memorable win without you having huge playoff ramifications as a result of it. In the NFL, people don't think that way. They think, oh, what does this mean for your playoff chances? Oh, it might hurt your chances of getting the number one pick in the draft. Stop. You beat Tom Brady 21-3. You kept him out of the end zone. PJ Walker's not supposed to be there. Steve Wilks isn't supposed to be there. You didn't have Christian McCaffrey, yet you had your best rushing game. That was special. And memorable. A fever dream, if you will.
The perception of Clemson football and just ACC versus SEC, how it's talked about.
Media bias is very real. It is. There's a difference in the way that the Alabama-Tennessee game is being framed than the Clemson-Wake Forest game. When really, they shouldn't be all that different, considering where those teams are at right now. But Clemson doesn't get much of a benefit of the doubt, despite the fact they won that game and Bama lost to Tennessee and allowing 52. But since it's the SEC, it's okay. When Ole Miss gets drubbed as a top 10 team, it's not an indictment on the conference. They say, oh yeah, that unranked LSU, actually pretty good. You know, Syracuse, when they do not pull off the upset against Clemson, It's, well, the Tigers should have won by more. It's Syracuse football, even though the fact they're ranked in the top 15. So what we need is an agreed-upon ranking, which I thought the AP poll was, to say, yeah, these teams are good and they should be respected when they have good results or when they come close to pulling off upsets. But the ACC doesn't get the same benefit of the doubt as the SEC, or at least not enough of a benefit that I think is fair.
Dave Clawson's Sam Hartman for Heisman rant.
You have got to campaign. Period. Sam Hartman's name would be discussed more if Sam Hartman was more available in the media. Plain and simple. If he doesn't want to do it, that's fine. I'm not going to criticize a guy who doesn't want to be in the Heisman race. But from the Wake Dave Clawson perspective, don't complain that you don't like media coverage or a guy's not being talked about enough if that guy has also not been available to the media. There's no quarterback in the state of North Carolina that does less media than Sam Hartman does. I don't mean that as a great slight or a diss. It's a fact. And if you want it that way, good. Just don't complain about the media coverage not being what you want it to be, especially when you're the smallest Power 5 school and probably should be doing more than everybody else rather than less.
NC State, Virginia Tech.
Oh boy. Maybe we could talk more about this game in a little bit. The Pack was actually fortunate. That's been the trend much of this year. That usually NC State's the team that's blowing leads and losing games that they're supposed to win. This year, they haven't had one instance of that happening, but they've had now three instances of the reverse, the inverse. Games you should probably have lost, but you won. East Carolina, Florida State, and this game against Virginia Tech qualifies in that. But we'll talk more about the Pack later.
Bucks Ravens.
The problems, Tampa's problems are definitely legit. Needed to find two words there. Definitely legit. You don't have a solid offensive line in front of Tom. Now you're losing Shaq Barrett. Bruce Arians isn't involved in it anymore. There's no real reason to believe that this is going to get turned around except for the name that's on the back of the number 12 jersey. If it was another quarterback, and I mean any other quarterback in history, we're saying this guy's washed, this guy's done. But since it's Tom, people are scared to do it, and I'm included on that list. I am scared to do that, and I'm not going to because I see how often people are wrong and burying that dude.
Doesn't help that he's going through a divorce either. That definitely does not help.
I'm sure it doesn't help, but I don't think it hurts as much as people suggest it does.
Last one, Ryan McGee fighting a Dairy Queen ice cream machine.
Ryan McGee murdered a cat.
Yeah, he did.
He did. He told this story about a year ago, how this cat just walked in one day and he said, "Hey, Julio, the ballpark cat," and then it just made a noise, creaked over, and died. Didn't give any of the past details. He just told us that this cat died. They didn't know, but they loved the cat so much that they decided to bury it under second base without people knowing about it. So they just buried a cat underneath second base, Julio, the ballpark cat. But now I learned that Ryan probably murdered this cat, considering he said, his words, that he fed this cat about 12 pounds of ice cream mix. Dairy Queen ice cream mix inside this ballpark in the 90s. Now, I think we're past the statute of limitations of mid-90s cat murder, but I don't know that for sure. That's been Keep It Simple for this week. Let's get one more dance break in there.
We suck.
Well, then the Tooth Fairy, which is a really popular one.
To be Jedi.
Oh, come on. Bam.
It's the Karen and my sixth man cross. I get the Karen and my sixth man cross.
No.
I'm T.S.
Motherfucker. Oh, I got scared.
Consider this situation. Can handle.
Oh! Foul! I got really scared.
I know you did. That was the point.
I was scarier than the entire movie. I do like Get Out, though. That's been Keep It Simple.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Let's go out to Louisville, Kentucky. There are two college teams in the state that people care about most. In the ACC, it's the Louisville Cardinals who are going to be playing Wake Forest. And then in the SEC, you've got the University of Kentucky, whom I'm going to see tomorrow play a team that I know your broadcast partner, Larry, cares a lot about. Stan Cotton's Tennessee Volunteers are playing Kentucky. I've never been to Knoxville, making my maiden voyage tomorrow to watch the number three team in the country play Will Levis and the Kentucky Wildcats. We can get to Wake Louisville football. We can get to the World Series. Where should we head first, Larry?
I want to go to Knoxville because that's going to be a heck of a game, too. That should be a lot of fun.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I feel like I made this analogy earlier. North Carolina is favored by about 3.5 points against Pittsburgh. WD Will Dalton, who you just talked to, he's going to be covering that game for us tomorrow. And Wake Forest is favored by about 3.5, 4, depending on where you look tomorrow. Both those lines stink to me. And it feels like on Halloween weekend, Wake Forest and North Carolina are like the teenagers in a horror movie that are alone at home. And you know one of them's going to end up stuffed in a basement upside down by weekend's end. You just don't know which one it's going to be. There are concerns with Carolina. There are concerns with Wake Forest, given past track record, which Dave Clawson was speaking to earlier this week. Staying with the Deacs, what is your greatest concern for Wake as they face what's bound to be a juiced-up Louisville Cardinal team hosting a top-10 team tomorrow?
My biggest concern is a career day by an underachieving member of a team that we know has the talent, but really maybe hasn't played quite to the level that we think. You know, one of those four tailbacks goes off for 160, or Malik Cunningham puts both sides of the game together and has the, you know, he's got so much talent, just hasn't quite come together on both sides. And if one of those kinds of things happens, then it could be a scary day. Louisville's played some good defense, but I think that Wake Forest has much too high-powered an offense for them to contain it for 60 minutes. I just worry about somebody going crazy on them, really. What's curious to me, and the spread that you just talked about, how did it go from a much bigger number earlier in the week to where it is now? What caused that to drop?
It's an excellent question. I'm sure maybe sharps and stuff putting money on things might potentially move it a bit, but it is scary to me. I think both those games are going to be decided by one possession, and I wouldn't be surprised if one of those two teams are falling. I think Wake Forest wins tomorrow. I'm more concerned about North Carolina, given they're a bit of a finesse team, and Pittsburgh's incredibly physical and needs to win tomorrow to stay in the coastal race. But do you buy, Larry, into the idea, especially when you talk about college kids, of a look-ahead factor when you consider you got three ranked teams in a row on the slate after this weekend, and one that I know Wake Forest has been circling for a while next week in NC State and Raleigh?
You know, ordinarily, they're still kids, right? They're still 19 to 22, 23-year-old kids. But I'll tell you, Josh, they've been like Stepford players this year, and the Stepford mom's reference for those too young to remember. You know, they're like robots. It used to be in years past you would hear one or two espousing the cliches that come from the coaching staff. This year, man, no matter who you talk to, it's, we got to go 1-0. You know, we've got to do, and they're all Dave Clawson's cliches that come out time after time after time from player after player after player. And maybe it's the maturity factor, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, about it being an older group, but they are all on the same page, and no, I don't think they look ahead. I think also the Liberty lesson was well learned.
Larry Sorensen's with us here. Wake Radio Network, former big league all-star too, getting to the World Series. Actually, before we get to the World Series, Will Dalton on social media has dug up an old picture of you, one of your old trading cards. It's you with
They're all old, Josh. They're all old.
It's okay? All Montreal. This one's a Montreal Expos one. I didn't realize you played for the Expos.
Yeah, very briefly at the tail end of my career, Buck Rogers was their manager, and I had played with him in Milwaukee. So he brought me in, and I won a spot in their rotation out of the out of spring training as a non-roster guy. Played there about half the year, and then got sent back down and retired shortly afterwards.
Did you learn French?
Oui.
Well said. Larry Sorensen is with us here. Do you have... This is what's interesting to me about the World Series. Before we get into the actual what's going to decide it, when you look at some of the storylines going in, to me, the word validation comes to mind. The Astros in the sense of the 2017 title, which some question because of the cheating scandal with them, winning one outright post that matters. Validation for Dusty Baker, who's never had a World Series championship. Bryce Harper, you know, he's been one of the best players in baseball the last decade. He's on this stage for the first time. Do you have a rooting interest between the Phillies and the Astros?
Well, Bake is a friend, so I've got a sentimental interest there. And, you know, I he's a terrific man. He's great to be around. A lot of knowledge and insight just from spending any time with him. So I'm pulling for him in a large way. I think the Astros have earned it, what, 4 out of 6 years in the World Series now? So I think that they've earned it. But the Phillies are on just such a crazy roll. You know, that emotion that can get a hold of you for a short time, you wonder if this little delay is going to affect it at all. But they're on a pretty good roll. So hopefully it'll be entertaining and go to 7 games and we'll all be thrilled with how it comes out. But if I was pulling for anybody, I'd say the Astros.
What matters to you the most when you're creating a criteria for projecting what might happen in a World Series?
Postseason pitching. You know, always. You look at the numbers through the years, and to me it's all about pitching and defense that gets you through those last 7 games. And so that's the edge that I think that the Astros have as well.
Spoken like a pitcher. Larry Sorensen joining us here on WSJS from Louisville. How excited should I be about my Orioles this offseason? Just, I haven't had a chance since I've known you to act with any type of swagger with my Baltimore Orioles. But I'm starting to get there, and boy, does it feel good, Larry.
Well, first of all, you know, I've got a soft spot in my heart for the Orioles because I broadcast the first game ever played in Camden Yards.
Is that right?
Yeah, helped break that park in the day that Rick Sutcliffe beat the Indians. So I've got some good memories from Baltimore. I always enjoyed Baltimore, and they've got a lot of talent coming through their organization. They're doing it with pitching. They're doing it with some defense, but pitching has been the focus. They're getting big time into the analytical world. So I think they've got a lot of promise, a lot of good talent. And our good friend Jeff Arnold, that spent some time in Winston-Salem, is one of their broadcasters. So we talk periodically, and he says they've got some good things coming up. So get that swagger going. Might wait a year or two, though.
Jeff's great people. Jeff Arnold, who, as you mentioned, ties to the Triad here. Tell Stan to text me some restaurant recommendations in Knoxville. What's for dinner for you tonight? What's for dinner for you and the crew in Louisville?
So we actually have a group going right across the restaurant. Right, there's a restaurant right across the street from the hotel right on the Ohio River. And it looks like it's going to be a beef night for us tonight is kind of what I'm thinking from the looks of the restaurant as we walk by. We went out for a walk a little bit earlier after the team got in. Saw Dave Clawson out clearing his mind a little bit. Everybody walking up and down the river walk, catching some fresh air and checking out the sights of the river and the city. We're actually in Indiana. We are across the river in Jeffersonville, Indiana, about 5 miles from the stadium.
Fake news Graham over here saying that you're in Louisville. Nope, in Indiana. All right, Sorensen, have a great call tomorrow, and hopefully we're talking about a Deacon win on Monday. Thanks for the time.
Always good talking to you, Josh.